Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, Ann Ball will have this week's Science in the News report, and Steve Ember will bring us another edition of The Making of a Nation. But first, Dr. Monica Vora says her patients are often worried when they come to see her at a free medical center in Washington, D.C. But she says her worries have increased recently. Most of Dr. Vora's patients are low-income members of minority groups and are mainly immigrants to the United States. Dr. Vora says many of her patients are worried that they will lose their health insurance if they received coverage through the Affordable Care Act. That law is often called Obamacare. She says critical statements by President Donald Trump about Obamacare make her patients worry they will lose their insurance. Trump and the Republican Majority Congress say they plan to cancel Obamacare and replace it. The new program will give, in the president's words, great health care for less money. Many poor Americans are waiting to see how any new program will affect them. Brian Nabinett is one of them. He has lived in Washington, D.C. for many years. VOA spoke with him at Bread for the City, a nonprofit organization that gives food, clothing, and legal and medical services to about 10,000 people every month. Nabinett says the organization is one of the beautiful places in D.C. Some volunteers at Bread for the City are not sure how the new administration's planned changes will affect poor people. Patrice Ali is one of those volunteers. She received food and clothing from Bread for the City when she was jobless. She told VOA that she is concerned about the situation of the poor and what services they will be offered. She said programs like Obamacare and Medicaid, a government health program for children and the poor, are very important. Ali believes few political leaders understand what is happening in the country. She says that in recent years, she has seen an increase in the difference in income between poor people and others. York, Pennsylvania is about 160 kilometers to the north of Washington. At the York County Food Bank, Grace Geltrude is getting food and other items that she says help her family survive. The food bank gives food to churches and other groups that help poor families in southern Pennsylvania. Debbie Kraut-Althoff is the Director of Development at the Food Bank. She says 680 kilograms of food are given on Fridays alone.
I think it's an eye-opening experience when you come back from lunch and you see people outside of our building lined up for blocks, to receive the food in all kinds of weather. And we kind of go through life with blinders.
She says some low-income people in the county are worried about whether they will lose their medical insurance. But she says they are most concerned about survival, how they are going to feed their family, how they are going to pay their bills.
astronaut Scott Kelly launched into space on a one-year mission to the International Space Station in 2015. He was weightless for 340 days. His identical twin brother, retired astronaut Mark Kelly, stayed on Earth. Because they are identical twins, Scott and Mark Kelly share almost all the same genetic material, or DNA. They agreed to let scientists study them before, during, and after Scott's mission to find out what a year floating in space may do to the human body. The investigation is known as the Twin Study, and the first results are now in. In the Twin Study, researchers are looking at 10 aspects of the human body. They are doing the investigation for NASA's Human Research Program. NASA is the American space agency. They introduced some early findings at a conference in Texas last month. At the conference, researchers said that some genetic changes occurred in Scott Kelly while he was in space. John Charles is the chief scientist for NASA's Human Research Program. He says researchers expected some of those changes, but there was a surprise, a change to Scott's telomeres. Telomeres sit on the end of chromosomes. Chromosomes are the part of cells that hold DNA. Usually, as people age, their telomeres become shorter. But when he was in space, Scott Kelly's telomeres did the opposite. They became longer. Charles says, usually astronauts have shorter telomeres than other people. He thinks this may be because their intense training on Earth is stressful. So, being in space, Charles says, may actually be less stressful.
They're eating well, they're sleeping, we hope, well, they have work that's meaningful to them, they're exercising, they have 2 hours every day for exercise, a luxury that many of us on the Earth would like to have, but can't afford.
Scott Kelly's telomeres shortened again when he returned to Earth. Researchers are also looking at the twin brothers' microbiomes. Those are the microorganisms, mostly good bacteria, that all humans carry in their intestines to help with digestion. Scott and Mark had different microbiomes, but NASA says that is probably because the men had different diets and different environments. Charles says Scott Kelly's microbiomes showed the astronaut was very healthy going into space and stayed healthy while he was there. Scientists also compared the two men's bones. They expected Scott to have more bone loss, a known problem connected to weightlessness in space. Sure enough, Scott's bone formation decreased during the second half of his mission. But over the year, the hormone that helps with bone and muscle health increased. Researchers say the increase is probably connected to all the exercising Scott did every day to combat the bone and muscle loss. So, while his bones did change, they may end up being just as strong as before. The researchers also studied the men's fine motor skills, how their hands and fingers work. To test the skills, the twins performed tasks with their fingers on a tablet computer screen. The early results show that Scott's accuracy and reaction time may have decreased while he was in space. As for now, the twin study is continuing. NASA's John Charles says the results will give the agency a new and powerful tool to prepare astronauts for long space flights, including going to Mars one day.
If we understand their bodies and how they change in these long-duration space missions beyond Earth, then we can better train them, better equip them, better prepare them, better support them for the missions that they're going to undertake.
Charles says the twin study will also take mental and emotional factors into account, because long space flights to and from Mars will mean years away from loved ones on Earth. Scientists are studying how to reduce feelings of isolation.
There is something really to think about as we consider sending people on long-duration missions off to Mars, where they won't have instantaneous communication whenever they feel like it.
But, Charles says, do not expect answers soon.
This is a painstaking, tedious process that will only gradually provide the results that we're expecting from this mission. So that give us a year or so to continue the analysis and let the investigators talk amongst themselves and talk with our colleagues and make sure they have the right results.
Then, he says, there might be some surprises when researchers truly understand what happened genetically to Scott Kelly in space and Mark Kelly on the ground. I'm Ann Ball.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we look at the presidential campaign of 1980 and the election of Ronald Reagan. The months before Election Day in November of 1980 were difficult for President Jimmy Carter. Many Americans blamed the Democrat for the nation's economic problems, including high inflation and high unemployment. Many also blamed him for not gaining the release of 52 American hostages in Iran. About a year earlier, Muslim extremists had seized the United States Embassy in Tehran and taken the Americans as prisoners. President Carter urged all Americans to support his administration during the crisis. As the months went by, however, he made no progress in bringing the hostages home. The Iranians rejected negotiations for their release, and an attempt to rescue them failed. The president appeared powerless. Carter's political weakness led another Democrat, Ted Kennedy, to compete against him for the party's nomination. Kennedy was a powerful senator from Massachusetts and brother of former President John Kennedy. But at their national convention, the Democrats nominated Carter for a second term, along with his vice president, Walter Mondale. Kennedy chose not to support them very strongly, so the Democratic Party was divided for the general election. The Republican Party, however, was united behind a strong candidate, Ronald Reagan, a former actor and former governor of California. Reagan's running mate for vice president was George H.W. Bush. Bush had served in Congress and as head of the Central Intelligence Agency. He had also represented the United States as ambassador to China and to the United Nations. The inability of the Carter administration to solve the hostage crisis and other problems made many Americans feel that their country was weak. Reagan promised to give them confidence once more in the nation's strength. Carter and Reagan debated each other several weeks before the election. To some people, Carter seemed angry and defensive, while Reagan seemed calm and thoughtful.
Next Tuesday is Election Day. Next Tuesday, all of you will go to the polls and make a decision. I think when you make that decision, it might be well if you would ask yourself, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Is it easier for you to go and buy things in the stores than it was 4 years ago? Is there more or less unemployment in the country than there was 4 years ago? Is America as respected throughout the world as it was? And if you answer all of those questions yes, why then I think your choice is very obvious as to who you will vote for. If you don't agree, if you don't think that this course that we've been on for the last 4 years is what you would like to see us follow for the next four, then I could suggest another choice that you have.
On Election Day, voters gave Reagan a huge victory. It became known as the Reagan Revolution. Inauguration Day was January 20th, 1981. Ronald Reagan became the nation's 40th president and, at 69, the oldest ever elected. In his inaugural speech, the new president talked about the goals of his administration. A major goal was to reduce the size of the federal government. Reagan and other conservatives believed that the nation's economy was suffering because of high taxes and unnecessary laws. Government, he said, was not the solution to the problem. Government was the problem. He urged Americans to join him in what he called a new beginning.
The economic ills we suffer have come upon us over several decades. They will not go away in days, weeks, or months, but they will go away. They will go away because we, as Americans, have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom.
Ronald Reagan was born in 1911 in the small community of Tampico, Illinois. He was a good student and a good athlete. During summers, he worked as a lifeguard at a river and saved a number of swimmers. He studied economics and sociology and was on the swim team at Eureka College, a small school in Illinois. While in college, he became interested in acting. But he did not have enough money to go to New York or Hollywood to study to become an actor. Instead, he tried out for a job as a sports announcer on radio. To show his abilities, he made a recording of a football game in which he announced all the plays. But the game was imaginary. He invented all the action. A radio station in Davenport, Iowa, liked his creativity and gave him the job. Later, Dutch Reagan, as he was called, worked at a radio station in Des Moines, Iowa, and then he moved to the big city, Chicago, where he worked as an announcer for the Chicago Cubs baseball team. In March of 1937, the Cubs were in California for spring training. Reagan went along, and while he was there, he took a screen test with Warner Brothers. The movie studio liked the friendly, handsome young man and offered him a job. In fact, in his first movie, he played a radio announcer. Before long, Ronald Reagan was a Hollywood star. He appeared in many movies, some good, some ordinary, but most very popular with the public. In the 1940 film Canute Rockne, All-American, Reagan played Notre Dame University college football player George Gipp. His deathbed speech contained a line that would often be associated with the Reagan presidency.
Ask them to go in there with all they've got. Win just one for the Kipper. I don't know where I'll be then, but I'll know about it. I'll be happy.
In King's Row, Reagan played a double amputee who had lost both legs.
Randy! 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 Where's the rest of me? Randy!
Yes, Drake?
It was an accident.
Yes, dear. But don't talk about it yet.
He remembered King's Row as the film that made him a star. During World War II, Reagan joined what was then the Army Air Corps and made training films. Reagan became deeply interested in politics during his years in Hollywood. He started out a liberal, but his political views became increasingly conservative. He served six times as president of the Screen Actors Guild, a union of movie actors. He was noted for his opposition to anyone in the movie industry who supported communism. Later, during his presidency, the public learned that he had also been a secret informant for the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This was during a campaign against suspected communist sympathizers in Hollywood. After the war, Reagan guided the Screen Actors Guild through a frightening time for actors and others in the entertainment industry. It was the time of the powerful House Un-American Activities Committee. Its hearings resulted in the feared blacklist. The blacklist was responsible for hurting, even ending, the careers of many in the film and television industries if they were thought to be communists or to have communist sympathies. It was through the blacklist scare that Reagan met his second wife, Nancy Davis. Her name had mistakenly been confused with that of another actress, causing it to appear on a blacklist, and she sought Reagan's help in correcting the mistake. They fell in love and would marry in 1952.
Must be a big push this time, Dace.
The Admiral told me not to tell.
Reagan and Nancy Davis appeared together in the World War II drama Hellcats of the Navy, in which he played a naval officer and she a Navy nurse who loved him.
The Admiral should have told me not to worry.
I thought we settled all that about you and me.
It won't stay settled, Case. Not until you tell me you stop caring.
By the early 1950s, Reagan stopped appearing in movies and turned instead to a new medium, television.
And every Sunday night, General Electric brings you the finest motion picture stars on TV. The great names in comedy, in mystery, in romance. Every week a star, all summer long, on the General Electric Theater.
For many years, Ronald Reagan was the commercial spokesman for General Electric and host of a series of dramatic shows. For much of his life, Ronald Reagan was a Democrat. But by 1960, he was making speeches for conservative Republican candidates. In 1966, he became a candidate himself. He ran as a Republican for governor of California. Democrats did not take him seriously. They made fun of some of his movie roles, as in Bedtime for Bonzo, a comedy where his co-star was a chimp. But Reagan had the last laugh. He won the election by almost 1 million votes. As governor, Reagan was praised for reducing the state's debt, but criticized for raising taxes. Some people also thought he reacted too strongly against student unrest on college campuses. But he won re-election in 1970. In 1976, Reagan ran for the Republican presidential nomination. He came close to winning that nomination away from President Gerald Ford. Ford recognized that there was strong support for Reagan among the convention delegates. After accepting the nomination, Ford asked Reagan to share the stage with him. The strong welcome that Reagan received was a clear sign of his future in the party. That future would come just 4 years later when Reagan won the presidency. On Reagan's inauguration day, Iran finally released the hostages it had been holding for 444 days. Walter Cronkite paused in his CBS television coverage of the inauguration for this breaking news report from Dan Rather.
Walter, according to our CBS news sources at Tehran Airport, one of the two Algerian jetliners is taxiing, or was just a few moments ago. And the drama on the runway of the Tehran airport continues as the long agony for the brave 52 has continued throughout this morning. Now, as best we can make it out, here is where the situation with the American hostages stands at this moment. They remain in Tehran, or at least they were up until just a few moments ago at the airport, apparently moments away from their flight to freedom, a few moments after spending 444 days in captivity. And can you imagine what it must have been like inside that airliner for the hostages this morning?
As president, Ronald Reagan quickly began work to get Congress to reduce taxes. He also began a weekly series of radio broadcasts. Each Saturday, he would comment on developments in American life and politics. The broadcasts were similar to the fireside chats of President Franklin Roosevelt during the 1930s. Reagan's ability to relate to people earned him the nickname the Great Communicator. 2 months after he took office, Ronald Reagan was shot while leaving an event at a hotel in Washington. In the first moments, no one realized that he had been hit, but there was a bullet in his left lung, close to his heart. At the hospital, Reagan jokingly told the doctors, "I hope you're all Republicans." They were able to remove the bullet, and he made a full recovery. But the shooting left his press secretary, James Brady, permanently disabled from a head wound. A Secret Service agent was also seriously wounded. The gunman, 25-year-old John Hinckley Jr., was sent to a mental hospital. His explanation for the attack was that he was trying to impress the actress Jodie Foster.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.